Hey, this is David, and we're back for part two from MyNAM's Insiders Club. This is our business operations micro workshop, and this morning's session with Will Matos was pretty outstanding. Will really told us a lot of stuff that they, in fact, I'll tell you what, this morning you got $1,000 coaching from Will Matos about running a business, at least that much money. That much coaching, value in coaching, because it was pretty awesome that he was opening up and telling us everything that they do in their systems. It was quite an enlightening call, and although I'd been doing quite a few of the things that we talked about, I realized there were still some holes that I needed to catch up on myself. Anybody else having any sound issues? And it's not just my crackling voice. If you're having any sound issues, please put in. Okay, Lawrence says sounds okay. Stan could be on your end, I'm afraid. Uh-oh. Candy says choppy. Maybe not. Anybody else having choppy sound? Okay. I'm going to proceed, and if it gets bad, please type in here. We've got sound issues, and I'll try to... maybe we'll have, I don't want to have to reboot, but we might have to reboot, but we'll give it a shot. Okay. The first thing I wanted to go through was the organizational, because we had talked quite a bit about that, but I wanted to wrap up a couple of key points that I felt were important as well. We're not going to talk about the finance system yet, because we're going to get into that in quite a bit in a minute. The support system, I wanted to tell you that we use Zendesk, as does Will, at his site. Will is using the paid version because they have 17, 18 people. We have three people that do support for us, and with three, you can get the free version. And it'll probably be a while before we go to the paid version, but with the I don't think it actually is free. I think it's $20 a year for the version we have. And then it gets expensive beyond that. But it's easy, it's universal, and it has a paid version, so it's very well maintained. So we like Zendesk a lot. We moved from we've tried a couple of other support systems, but Zendesk seems to be the one that gets the best maintenance and is most universally used. So there's that. I wanted to talk a second about insurance too, because I actually did an interview with my own agent, who is Michael Holyfield. He's a State Farm agent, and Michael has all of our insurance, including our personal and our business insurance. And we talked a lot about what does an agent do for you, and what kind of things do you need to look out for. And one of the things that an agent will do for you if you have a good one, and this is the key, is making sure you get a good one, is that they will become your advocate. I've had the same insurance agency here for 10 years. I'll tell you a story about my dad and his agency when I was growing up. When I was about 12 years old, maybe 13 or 14, I lived on a farm with my folks. It was a small farm, and we had a small barn. And I came home from the school one day and got off the bus, and there was the barn way back in the field burning. It had already gotten down to a pile of burning rubble. And so my dad called the insurance agent that night as soon as it was done. And I said, our barn burned down. Is it covered? And the agent said, you know, I don't think it is, because we did not have a coverage in your homeowners protection or your farm protection, whatever it was, for outbuildings. So it only covered the house. About 2 hours later, Dad was really disappointed, going to have to build a barn, out of pocket, all of that. About 2 hours later, the agent called back and he said, you know, I've been reading this and it doesn't say it isn't covered. So based on it not being covered specifically, he went back to the insurance company and was able to get it covered for my father and our family, and was completely replaced. That was all because we had a good insurance agent who was looking out for us. And that's the kind of agent you want to find, you want to look for. this review your insurance needs is really important. You find a good agent and you sit down with them and say, here's the kind of business that I have. Now, I have two corporations. I have Maximize Communications, which is a consulting and teaching company, and I have Niche Affiliate Marketing System Incorporated, which I'm going to have to change that corporation name this year too. But that is the online business corporation. So I went to Michael, my insurance agent, and said, here is our business. You've got our personal already. Here's our business. We both work out of our house. My wife and I work out of our house. I work in the basement and never see anybody, and I have a dedicated office. And I've got a lot of equipment. Okay, so that needed a rider. It needed all the equipment protection. It needed a loss kind of policy just to cover all of that stuff. Because if it burns down, if the house burns down, or we get an electrical surge or something like that, we kill all this stuff, then I want to be able to replace it quickly. My wife, on the other hand, teaches voice from home. So sometimes you might hear in the background people upstairs singing. And it is my wife teaching classical voice to students who come to the house. And she has about 10 to 12 of those a week that come to the house. That's a whole different ball game because it is different types of liability. That people falling, people, you know, maybe something happens in the house, maybe something happens in the driveway, maybe the dog bites them. You know, we have a whole new area of liability. So we have a large liability umbrella that covers not only our business online, but also our home and our business at home. My wife's visiting customers and my customers through our facility here. So we also have liability for, you know, somebody suing us because they didn't like what we did in our online business. And all of that's really important. Now, we have to continually review our insurance because I find areas where I need additional insurance on a regular basis. For example, this week in Atlanta, January the 30th. And January the 28th this week in Atlanta, the entire interstate system in Atlanta was a parking lot because of ice and snow. Now, what would that do to me from an insurance perspective? Nothing 50 weeks of the year. But 2 weeks of the year, I'm in Atlanta with a workshop. Next week is my workshop in Atlanta. If this ice and snow had come next week, people couldn't have flown in. I couldn't have gotten anybody to the hotel. We couldn't have put on the workshop. Let's just say it lasted a few days, and we couldn't have put on the workshop. What am I going to do from that perspective? People are going to want their money back. That's money that is long gone because it was collected 6 months ago, and it's been paid out to affiliates, and it's been, you know, all of the expenses of putting on the workshop and everything go to finance the next one. So I realized I got to have event insurance. And, you know, this is NAMS 11, and I have had event insurance before where it was protecting me because a woman fell in her shower at the hotel, and I realized the hotel was covered, but maybe I wasn't covered. I might have some liability there. So we had event insurance that way. But I've got to go back and take a look and see what happens if something, act of God, whatever, doesn't allow us to put on a workshop. I want to be able to pay people back and not incur that complete loss myself. So that's business continuity insurance, and it's also event insurance, and it's something called loss of income insurance as well. So I've got to look at all of those things because of what happened in Atlanta this week. So I'll be connecting with my insurance agent, making sure we are covered in those cases. Now, the second thing that's really interesting is we're doing this workshop today, and I got a text from an old high school friend from 40 years ago who actually is an agent, and he wanted to come to the workshop. And it turns out he's not going to be able to come, but he's an agent, and the reason he wanted to come to the workshop was because he specializes in cyber Risk, cyber risk, insurance. What does that mean? If you get hacked, that got my attention. If you get hacked, or if you have identity theft, or if you have some kind of work stoppage based on cyber activities, you can be insured against that. So I'm going to be talking to him about protecting ourselves from hacking and other kind of things. And it's interesting. I've got a malicious, successfully blocked access to a potentially malicious website right here on my screen. So being protected all the time, even via insurance, is really important. Okay. So self-insured, what is self-insured? Self-insured is when you're going to pay for things out of pocket. Basically, I call that the deductible. You know, if I'm willing to do $5,000 in self-insurance, you know, for replacing a computer or replacing a fax machine or whatever it is and some equipment in the house, then that to me is self-insurance, and I get a much lower rate for doing those kind of things. You want to make sure that you have enough liability to cover your personal assets, and you want to understand what the different types of liability are. And I talked about the risk of falling on the property. Let's see, professional liability, consulting liability. When I was a consultant, and I was a consultant for Fortune 10 company, I had to have consulting insurance so that if I gave them, if I provided incorrect or what they determined to be really dead wrong advice, from a consulting perspective, or I didn't deliver on what I said I was going to deliver, they wanted me to have insurance so that I could, they could recover any damages from me. And I did. And that was a contingent, contingent on our contract with them. So I did that. And it was like $2,000 a year just for that insurance. If you have employees, you have a whole different ball of wax. An employee versus a contractor presents you with all kinds of different liability issues. One of the reasons I like contractors versus employees, and I know Will talked this morning all about employees, and they do employees, and that's been their choice from the beginning. But I've chosen contractors because I like the independence of contractors. I like to be able to give projects to people versus assign people daily tasks. I like to be able to use contractors whenever it's convenient on a surge basis versus a always trying to find something for an employee to do. But employees, once you have an employee, the employee presents you with a ton more liability because if they do something, you can be sued for what they do. A contractor, on the other hand, cannot. In most cases, cannot. And then we talked about the home office. We won't go into that anymore. There is life insurance. Now, life insurance is basically to cover you for any business, and I'm talking about business life insurance. I have a huge life insurance policy, and it's expensive as it can be because as I get older, it goes up every year. My wife has an insurance policy as well, which is not as big, because if something happens to my wife, it's a different situation because we don't lose our complete or most of our income because I generate most of the income through the NAMS business. She generates about 25% of the income, 20% of the income through her teaching. So I have a smaller policy on her. But basically, what we have is a key man policy. And a key man policy is what Will was talking about this morning, which was if somebody in the business is absolutely essential to making it run and that person goes, then you need to be able to hire somebody or recover. In my case, since there's only the two of us in this corporation, what I've done is create a policy that will allow my wife to actually hire a couple of people that I've already designated who know the business because they're affiliated with the business now, who can come in and work with her on either selling the business or changing the business or whatever needs to happen. But those people are on board and know what needs to happen already. Let's see. Yeah, that's what we just talked about. And the business owns the insurance. Now, that gets into the corporation aspect of this whole thing. We're going to come back to that in just a second. But that there's a real advantage to the business owning the insurance. And let's see, what about the insurance costs? The agent also helps you manage your cost so that you can determine where most risk is and how to get the best bang for the buck. And that's one of the things I like about working with an agent most of the time. Oh, and one of the advantages if you stay with the same company is about getting multiple policy discounts. So that's always something to be aware of as well. And like I said, I use State Farm for everything. And there are some things that we have not gone with State Farm on, but we have actually originally, like I had my life insurance with other people, and I'm not advocating State Farm. I'm just saying that I go with a specific company because we have gotten good service and we have gotten a good relationship, and then because of the multiple policy discount, we were able to bring those other life insurance policies back in-house for better rates, believe it or not. Okay, I think that's enough about the insurance, but we will have a checklist on actually determining what kind of insurance you need, finding an agent, doing all that kind of stuff. Banking. I wanted to talk a little bit more about banking. To me, banking is a really important thing. Will talked quite a bit about it, but for me, the banking aspect of this is so important that one of the very first things I did was create a relationship with our banker. Now, I went in and spent time with him and got to know him, and I went in like every week to have an appointment with the guy for the first 3 or 4 months. Whenever I went in to make a deposit, I always walked by his office, said hello, shook his hand, talked to him, found out what was going on in his life, created a relationship. So that when I called him, he knew who I was, knew the business, and in fact, I had him come to our house when we were building our house so he could see the property, see the business, see the building, and what we were planning to do going forward with the land here. So he's been on board with us ever since day one, and that's been like 10 years now. I had an advantage, though. I had a relationship with this banker who was starting a new bank, and he had. And it's just the way that you can do it. The way that I did it, you can do this as well, or you can go with a big bank. Will said that they had a personal banker from Wells Fargo. My personal banker is the president of the bank. So. It's a small branch bank, with 5 branches. And when we got with the president of the bank, it was running out of a trailer in downtown Cullman, Alabama. Brand new bank. So it was easy to become one of their best clients. And I knew the guy, I knew the people that were the backers of the bank, and I knew that it was going to grow, and I knew it was going to do well. So I took a little risk in affiliating with that bank instead of like the Bank of America down the road. And it did. They now have 5 large branches, and they have grown hand over fist over the last 10 years, and tons of employees now, tons of assets. And I have a relationship with the president of the bank as well as the primary business loan officer so that I can go in and get a letter of credit whenever I need to. And I do have a letter of credit with the bank so that I can level out cash flow issues whenever I want to. And that's one of the reasons you want a great relationship with a bank, is so that when your business hits a dry spot or you see a lag in certain seasonal kind of things, if you have that kind of business, then you can even that out and pay that line of credit down, or you can use that line of credit for a special project, whatever it is, and then manage your cash flow easily. I've never missed affiliate payments. One of the reasons is I have a line of credit that I can go back and forth with to always make sure that we have affiliate payments available. Gets dicey sometimes, but that's just cash flow management. Okay. Sorry, that's the bank. Accounting. I said earlier I had a bookkeeper. I was terrible about reconciling transactions in not only checking account, but credit card statements and PayPal account. It finally got to the point where I just couldn't do it and run the business as well. So I have gone as much as 4 to 6 weeks of just doing tax information in the past. And for the past 6 years, I have had a bookkeeper who every month on the 15th of the month drops my QuickBooks data in our Dropbox, and I just open it up and there it is. Now she reconciles every one of our PayPal transactions, and we have thousands of PayPal transactions every month, and all of our bank accounts and our merchant accounts as well, so that we know exactly where everything is going, and it gets categorized. So I get a financial statement on the 15th of the month, which is a balance sheet showing us where we are balance-wise, net worth-wise, and an expense and profit and loss statement every month as well. So I can see where we're up and where we're down. And frankly, that part of it, the reports, has only really happened in the last year. It took her about a year to get up to speed on what we were doing. And every month we'd spend about 6 hours on one day just going over every transaction so that she would see how we're doing it and what we're doing. And who they were being assigned to. Let's see. So now though, she does this pretty quickly every month because she knows everything inside out and she knows how our business operates. And I pay her a monthly retainer. That's it. The bookkeeper is strictly for business. Strictly for business. Our personal accounts are very simple. Because of the incorporation, we keep almost all of our expenses through the corporate entity that are legitimate business expenses. And you'll be amazed how many things you can put into the corporate expense bucket if you are in a corporate entity. For example, our health insurance is paid by the corporate entity. We don't pay personal health insurance because that is a company perk. Since we only have 2 employees, my wife and myself, all the employees get health insurance. That's a great benefit. 401k systems all are managed and operated by the corporate entity. All of our payments to our contractors are corporate entity. My house and my land is in a separate corporation. So anything that happens on the house and the land goes into that corporation as well. So any repair and I don't mean personal kind of repair things, but anything that's a repair on the land itself as a land corporation and a development corporation, because we have lots for sale here and all that kind of stuff, goes through that. So we show very little income in our business because of the way we have it structured. Even our travel, pretty much, is through the corporate entity, because we can always do something in the location we're going to make it a business expense. For example, all of those images that I have sold through the royalty-free image packs are taken on travel vacation type trips where we go away, I make pictures, bring them back, and put them into the stock photography world. Since I was a photographer before, it's a legitimate thing for me to do. Any purchases of equipment along those lines through the corporate entity. So I get great tax benefits from that. And my accountant keeps me straight to make sure that I don't go too far on any of that stuff. Okay, but the bookkeeper is really important for me. And by the way, I'll check with her, but she knows my business so well now, I think she'd actually be willing to take on a few other clients if you're interested. And I pay her a retainer each month, and it is not very much. I'm tickled to death with the way this is working out. So just reach out if you're looking for somebody like that. Okay, corporation, we talked about that a little bit. So why incorporate? Personal asset protection and limited liability for personal assets inside a properly structured corporation. Additional credibility, instant credibility. Add an Inc. or an LLC to your company's name means you're serious. Consumers, vendors, partners may prefer to do business with an incorporated company. Name protection. Most states won't allow someone else to use your exact or even close name for their corporate entity. I tried to incorporate NAMS Inc. in Alabama, and there was already something similar. It was not NAMS, but it was something similar, and they would not let us incorporate that. So I incorporated Niche Affiliate Marketing System Inc., which I wish I hadn't done, but I did. And so that's the reason. In Georgia, we had Maximize Communications Incorporated. In Alabama, there was something close to that, so I had to do Maximize Communications LLC. And sometimes you can get away from that. And an LLC and an S corporation, since I was doing an S corporation in Georgia, and I wanted to move it to an S corporation here, I ended up choosing LLC, and then you can elect to treat an LLC as an S corp. And I did that. We'll talk about that in a second. We talked about tax flexibility. I like that. Deductible expenses. We've talked about that. S-Corp, C-Corp, LLC. These are the three big ones, really. The S-Corp is a pass-through income. And like Will said, I'm not an attorney, not an accountant, not a CPA. All of this is just from my understanding and from my own reading. And it's worked for me for a while. S-Corp is a pass-through income to owners each year. Owners are actually shareholders, and you get what's called a K-1 prepared by your accountant at the end of the year. Your K-1 then goes to your personal taxes as your income from a distribution from your S-Corp. And it has to be, an S-Corp balances it out at zero at the end of each year. So you don't retain any earnings. A C-Corp, on the other hand, can retain those earnings to the next year. They can actually pass those earnings forward, so there's no income distributed. So Robert Kiyosaki, that Will mentioned earlier, recommends only ever doing a C-Corp. And but based on the talks that I've had with other people, it just didn't make sense for my business. So we wanted to do an S-Corp, and that's what we chose. We do have an LLC for our consulting and teaching company, but also treat it as an S-Corp. There are other ways to do this. There's sole proprietorship, which is not incorporated. You don't get the tax benefits. You don't get any of the liability protection, any of that with a sole proprietor. There are professional limited partnerships. I think those are called PLCs. And it's usually for attorneys, doctors, those kind of things. And I don't know anything about those. I assume it's kind of like an LLC, but I don't know. So we won't talk about that. We've talked about these things this morning. So that is it on incorporation. Any questions on this stuff yet? Do you see how this could fit with your business? Or do you have a corporation yet? Are you sole proprietor or are you incorporated? Say yes or no in the box, please. Incorporated, yes or no? Good. I see an oh yeah, LLC. Have all of the above. Good for you. okay, good. So, well, now I see the same person says, oh yeah, I've got it. Maybe you're saying, yeah, this is relevant, because you also say later that you are a sole proprietor. And I see a couple of people saying, no, not yet. If you're going to do business, I would really, really encourage you to get with an accountant, and as Gayla points out here, determine what type of business you have and what type of corporate structure you need. It is all, it is very specific to each business. Now, the downside of incorporation, there's a lot of paperwork. So you need to understand that it's going to cost you more from a tax perspective to maintain corporations. I had three corporations running at once, and my tax load was huge. It was about $3,600 for the year. And that was on one corporation that had zero activity in it. But you still have to file all the paperwork. Because I was closing that corporation, we didn't do any activity on it in that year. And so when we got ready to close that corporation, and by the way, that is paperwork to close a corporation, you have to file the paperwork to close it. I still had to file the forms and pay the accountant to create all that stuff. So there is a larger paperwork cost for corporations. You do have to have meetings. You do have to have board meetings. It's pretty easy for me and my wife to have board meetings, and we can have board meetings wherever we want, so that's great. You do have to prepare minutes. You do have to keep a book. So there's a lot that goes into maintaining a corporation, but the benefits, in my opinion, are way above the downside. Company organization. I want to talk about this for a few minutes. Will went into some specifics about how they manage their company and about the book, The E-Myth Revisited. I actually think I have a link for that because I recommend that book so often. I think it is NAMS.WS. Come on, I'm not hitting in. E-Myth, I think. Yep, going to Amazon. So that's it. It is this. I try to read this book every year. It is the best book out there about mindset for a real business, and it was the first book that I ever read that made me understand what an actual franchise is, and it is not what I thought it was. It's not what you think it is either. It's not McDonald's. A franchise is a business that has systems in place that can be repeated by other people. So when you think about a franchise from that perspective, we all want our business to be a franchise, because we want to have somebody else come into that business at some point and be able to actually do whatever they need to do to maintain our business. Otherwise, you are the business, and you don't want to be the business. You want to be a cog in the business. You want to be the leader of the business. You want to be the strategy behind the business, maybe. But you don't want to be the person that has to be there to run that business always. And this book, Gayla points out here too, that she has a copy from 1995, and it is just as relevant today. I think Michael Gerber actually may have died last year. I believe that he did. And by the way, Michael Gerber went through a... Now, I haven't looked this up, but this is what another business person told me. Michael Gerber went through a really ugly divorce a few years ago and actually lost the rights to The E-Myth Revisited. So it was an example of the company getting so big that when they split it up, that he couldn't control the rights of it. So it's an interesting irony, actually, for Michael Gerber. But I want to talk about this org structure, because in this org structure, which pretty much comes right out of that book, you have a CEO. CEO has an assistant. Under the CEO are the CMO, the chief marketing officer, the CIO, the chief information officer, the CFO, the chief financial officer, the COO, the chief operating officer. Now, these are just standard business organization titles. And under those, you have each of these departments, right? So I did this right after reading that book several years ago again on a whiteboard, wrote all of these blocks up there. Excuse me. I was wondering when I would cough. It's just 40 minutes into this thing. Okay. So you have all of these blocks, and you have these areas for names in these blocks. My name was on every one of them because I didn't have a chief marketing officer. That was me. I didn't have a chief information officer. That was me. All of these are still, the C-level ones are pretty much me. I do have somebody who is running the operations. I do have a bookkeeper who is helping me with the finance and the accounting. Now, I'd also have an account, a CPA, so I really could put them in there as the CFO, although they're not completely involved in the hiring decisions. So I could actually have that person more involved if I wanted to pay more money. CIO, I actually have a guy who handles our infrastructure and these things down here, development and infrastructure, but I haven't released the management capability for up there yet on the CIO. So these are still my pretty much my jobs, and we have different people in these boxes down here. The CEO in this organization builds the vision. Vision, building the vision doesn't mean that he has the vision. It means that he builds the vision from different pieces. He's the architect of the vision. He's the person who understands what the company is supposed to be doing, providing what services they're providing, and how they're providing them, and how they're going to grow. He's the guy who takes all of the input pretty much from these guys down here, from stakeholders who would also be shareholders or board members or husband, wife, family, whoever is a stakeholder in your business, takes all of that input and builds the vision. That's the CEO. His job is to make sure that the vision then gets executed. These folks are the executioners. CMO, CIO, CFO, COO. These folks are responsible for creating a plan to implement the vision. And that's, I don't care what size your company is. You have this structure in place. It doesn't matter whether you're wearing all the hats or just the top hat. You're going to have this structure in place. Now, some companies, and I'm thinking Apple is a good example. In the beginning, Steve Jobs was CEO. He was co-founder with Steve Wozniak. Wozniak was CIO for a while because Wozniak had a huge depth of knowledge in the development of software. So Jobs was also the CMO for a long time because he was the chief marketing officer. And probably, I would hate to have been the chief marketing officer under Steve Jobs because he could never really let that one go. You have to have all of these pieces in place and put the right people in those pieces. And sometimes that's you until you get bigger. But you have to remember, you got to have the vision. You got to wear that hat as the CEO to build the vision. Okay? By the way, you're going to get this mind map, and then we're building a spreadsheet. We're going to go to that in about 20 minutes, where we're building a checklist through a spreadsheet for you on the rest of this material. Now, I wanted to show you, this is a finance spreadsheet from my that I use that it's a little different from what Will talked about today. One of the things that I do, because I'm such an affiliate-driven business, I need to know how much sales I have to make for every dollar I spend. So if I'm going to spend a buck today, how much do I have to bring in sales to cover what is probably going to be an affiliate commission? 43% of my revenue goes back out in affiliate commissions. It's not an expense to me, but it is something I have to be aware of because it drives the sales numbers. Sorry. So that leaves me with 57% net of every dollar that comes in. For every $100, can you see this, by the way? Can you see this okay on your screen? It is a little bit, if I make it the right size, it's going to be a little small, I think. Let's see if I make it the right size. Let's try to make it the right size. There, that clears it up a little bit. Can you see that better? Okay. So, for example, if we talk about hosting at $100, I got to make $175.44 to pay for that hosting. We got to get that much revenue in just to pay for that hosting. So this gives me a little different view on what Will was talking about earlier today. So if I've got $2,550 in expenses from the fixed and the variable, and I'm going to need $4,473.68 to break even, because the first thing I'm going to do is give 43% of my revenue out to affiliates. Does that make sense why I've set this up this way? Can you relate to that? Okay. One of the things here that that I wanted to point out about this particularly was this is just break-even numbers. This is not profit numbers. So let's talk a little bit more. We're talking about metrics and measuring here. So you have to understand what your sales need to be and what your expenses need to be. We talked about driving traffic. I wanted to show you, this is 1 month that I pulled, that was a comparison of traffic from 2012 to 2013. And you can see we had in affiliate clicks, I always want to know how many affiliate clicks come in and what the conversion is on affiliates. So affiliate clicks, we had 7,744 in 2012 in that month on affiliate clicks. We must have had a big promotion or something going on. 2013 on that month, we had 6,517 affiliate clicks. So we had, what's that, about 1,200 fewer affiliate clicks. New referrals was exactly the same. That means somebody created a transaction in our system that had not been there before. They were exactly the same. So we had a better conversion rate for referrals on the affiliate clicks in 2013 than we did on 2012. But we had more new customers in 2012 from those referrals. This was probably a very low-cost item on that month that drove in a lot of new leads. We probably had a higher-priced item on this month that drove in new customers from those fewer new customers from those leads. So the sales, $58,616 in 2012 on that month, $41,316 on that month in 2013. These are real numbers, so I'm letting you see a little bit inside our company and what happens in the background there. So the customer to click ratio, that would be this number 344 divided by 7744 was 4.44%. So that was click to sales ratio is what I'm trying to figure here for affiliates. That's not all the clicks in our system. That doesn't include direct traffic. 4.4% conversion to new customers. Not bad. On 2013, it was 2.61% conversion. It seems like a huge drop. It might have been a higher cost item, but it was basically 170 divided by 6517, 2.61%. But here's the kicker. Value per customer for that month was $170.40. Value for customers in 2013 was $243.04. Which month do I like the numbers better? Which month do I like the numbers better? Personally, I'm liking the value per customer better. This is always the number that I like. Earnings per click, you can see here, $7.57 on each of the affiliate clicks and $6.34 on each of the affiliate clicks here. The value per customer, the value per customer for me is really important, because that tells me how I can grow it better, how I can add more numbers to grow the system better. Stan says, "This I can't tell because this does not reflect profit." You're right. It doesn't reflect profit. And that's a different tracking system for us, is reflecting the profit of this. But if I want to just know how traffic and conversion is working, which is what we're talking about here, that gives me really good indicators on where I might have some trouble. This month, I had fewer numbers in. So if I wanted to make more money, I needed to get more numbers at the top, and I needed to improve that funnel that created the new customers, because I had the same numbers here. Just fewer people in, same numbers, which was better referral conversion, worse customer conversion. So I needed to look at that funnel and improve that funnel. And if that number had stayed the same, let's just say I'd stayed at 4%, which would have, what, doubled that number to about, let's say it goes to 300. So if that was 300 at 243.04, get up my handy dandy calculator. Would have been $72,912. So if I'd maintained the same customer to sales conversion, I would have had an additional $30,000. I don't care what the profit is on that. I do, really. But I'm going to have a whole lot more profit as long as I am profitable. So that really tells me a lot just by tracking. And then, of course, Will told you about the support tickets and the tracking there. One of the things that's not being tracked here that I would like to track is at one point in our system, our Google Analytics, our support desk was our number one referral method. That ain't good. Because when people are going to your support desk before they even come from search engine traffic or something else, then you got some issues that you need to work on. But if we are making a lot of sales from our support desk, I want to be able to track that too, because sales from the support desk is should be high. So we want to make sure that we are sending people back to sales pages and offering them solutions in the support desk that help them move forward by giving them another product. Okay. Now, the test execute feedback. On the execute, we're going to do a spreadsheet. And the feedback and the improve, you'll just have to work this and use the measure it, the tracking systems that we talked about, so that you can actually see how your tracking method works and how you are converting and what you're doing there. Are you ready for me to move to the spreadsheet and kind of talk about some of the things that we're going to do there on the spreadsheet? Any questions about what we've done so far? Any questions about this morning? Okay, looking good. Now, let's get the spreadsheet up. First thing I'm going to start with is knowing what your number is. And this is a really simple thing. You want to know what your annual profit is. How much do you want to make? How much do you want to take home? And I'm talking about your income. I'm talking about your income, not the company profit. I'm talking about your income. How much do you want to make? How much do you want to take home each month? I put in $200,000. Let's see what happens if I figure those numbers out. How many weeks a year will I work? I've written down 46. That means I got 6 weeks of not working. And you know, if you take away the Fridays that I go away for football, the time we go to the beach, which I would really love not to work when I go to the beach, you know, the other kind of travel that my wife and I do sometimes around holidays and stuff, 6 weeks of not working is not a bad thing. I could put in here easily 6 months. Why not do 6 months of not working? It's just numbers. You just figure out what it is that you want to do, but I also like to work. So I put in 46 weeks of working, 5 days a week. Hours per week, I put in 40 hours a week. Assuming that I'm going to be productive 75% of the time, which is my productivity number I put in there, I want to figure out what my hourly profit number needs to be. There's a couple of reasons I want to know this number. But first, let me tell you how we found it. You take this number and this $200,000 number, and it's going to be divided by 46 hours a week, 40 hours a week, or 46 weeks, 40 hours times 75%. And that's going to end up with this 144, right? And then all I did to get the daily number is the weeks per year times 5 divided by, or the $200,000 divided by the weeks per year times 5, since I had said that it was 5 days a week. Okay? So that gives me two numbers that I can work with. I need to be making $869.57 in profit every day if I want to hit my $200,000 income. I need to be making $144.93 an hour in profit if I want to make that number. Okay? So I've created this little deal for you to figure out what your number is. So let's say that you want to put in, you want $100,000 a year. Whoops, that's a million. Let's just hit that, see what happens with a million. Bingo. Daily number needs to be 4347 for $1 million in profit. The hourly number is 724. Okay, so let's say that it is $100,000. So it's $434 a day, $72 an hour. Why is this important? Maybe you want to replace your job. Maybe you're just doing this part-time and you have a job. So if you have a job that is paying you $65,000 a year, what's it going to take for you to be able to quit your job? It's going to take $282 a day in profit and $47 an hour. Okay? Does this make sense? Is this something that you can use to help you figure out what your number is? Okay. Type in here, just tell me, and when I'm not going to use any names, you guys put in what your number is that you would like to make on an annual basis. Just type in the number that you would like to make on an annual basis. I won't say your name. Okay. It might be something that you are trying to replace an income of some sort. Okay, somebody said 70,000. There you go. Your number is $50.72, $304.35 a day. It's for $70,000. Let's see, 100K we did, Arthur. I'll do it again. 72.46, $434 a day in profit. Let's see, $250,000. Okay, it's $181 an hour, and over $1,000 a day in profit. Okay, so Art's asking a good question. And let's see, somebody actually says $15,000 because they don't need much. They just want to replace what they've got going on. So it's $10 an hour, almost $11, $65 a day in profit. $65 a day in profit. Art's asking a really good question here, which is, hold on a second. How does that relate to the company profit? Well, it relates to the company profit depending on what you want to do with your company. So it goes back to the mindset that Will was talking about earlier. So if I say I want to have $200,000 in profit, that is just for me, $200,000 that comes to me, personal income, then if I get $200,000 in profit, if I hit that goal and I take all of that money, I have no money left for the growth of the company, for investing back in the company. Personally, if I was doing $200,000 in profit, then I probably would only take, you know, maybe $100,000, so that I would have another $100,000 to put back into the company, so I could grow the company. I want to get back to that question to really get focused on it, because there's a lot of good questions coming in about this. You don't want to make it too complicated. You want to determine what your annual income is and then how you would go get that. Okay? So, let's see. Art says, if, as Will said, he wants the company to grow too, how does that figure in? So, it doesn't figure into this sheet. It doesn't figure into this sheet. You could actually change this to easily be... well, let's see. How can we do that? Maybe we should create a separate sheet for just what the company profit is. No, we'd go back to what Will had in his, which was a monthly growth profit. And then you would always want your monthly growth profit to be greater than the amount that you're going to take out. So we'll just use what Will had in his spot for this sheet, so that we could figure the growth profit, the profit and the growth, and always make sure that it's more than this amount that you're going to take out. And maybe annual profit is not what we want to say. Maybe it is annual personal income on this sheet. And the reason I wanted to get to this number, and I think this number is important, is Will was talking about you don't want to work for free, right? So this is your number. This is the part that we're talking about here. This is your number. So if you were going to do some coaching and you needed to make $144 an hour to be profitable, would you charge $100 an hour? I don't think so. Because you'd be losing money, right? Candy says you would charge $200 an hour. And you probably would charge $200 or more an hour. You might even charge $500 an hour. I think this is why you hear people say, well, I charge $500, $750, $1,000 an hour for coaching. And, of course, when you buy blocks of coaching, you get it for, you know, $200, $300, $400, whatever it is. And that's why people sell coaching on a monthly basis, because they can sell it for cheaper and stay above this number still, because this number is really important for you not to give away your time for less than what your hourly number is. Okay? That's why we want to make sure that you know what your hourly number is. Let's see. Somebody else asked what the productivity number is. How did you figure your productivity number? I didn't figure a productivity number. I just know me. And I know that in an 8 hours, 8 hours during the day, there's probably going to be a couple of hours that I found myself on Facebook, or I went over and did something that I wanted to do instead of writing the email that I needed to get out. There's a couple hours a day where I am very unproductive and just trying to catch up with. And it can be that sometimes I'm just trying to catch up with stuff that just has to be done. It's kind of that C drawer stuff or B drawer stuff when you are doing the time management thing. You know, you've got your A drawer, your B drawer, and your C drawer. And the A drawer is do it now because it's urgent and important. B drawer is do it as soon as you can because it's important, not urgent. And C drawer is don't do it ever. Some of the B drawer stuff falls into the not productive category to me. Okay, so let's see. I just chose a number, Stan, for the productivity. I figured 2 out of 8 hours a day was probably about right for me. Yeah, you could have a salary column for all salaries. Now, I will tell you why I'm doing this for these numbers. Let's see, where was my, this. This is the fixed and variable cost that I told you about. Remember this number here, 57? I was really outsourcing heavy for the last half of last year. My outsourcing costs were through the roof. And one of the things I had to figure out was how much was it actually costing me to use outsourcing folks as much as I did. So if I was paying somebody $1,000 a month, and I had three or four people that I was paying $1,000 a month to do different kinds of activities for me, if I was paying somebody $1,000 a month, I had to make $1,754 in sales just to pay for that person. So look what happens if I change that to $10,000, which is closer to what I was paying each month for outsourcing. And these were VAs, programmers, project managers, operations people, support people. I had to do $17,000 in income, in revenue each month, to come close to paying for my outsourced people. Now that's a heck of a nut that you have to crack every month. So I was able to look at this, have this conversation with each one of the people that I had outsourced, that I was using for outsourcing as a contractor. And I came back to them and I would say, okay, so here's what we're doing. I got $1,000 that I'm paying you, and you're an expense. I got to make $1,754.39 to cover your expense. How can you help me make $1,754.39 to cover that $1,000 to pay for yourself? How can I turn you from an expense into a profit center, from an expense center into a profit center? One of the things that, and I'll give you an example, we have somebody who reaches out to folks when they cancel their membership. Prior to this person coming on, what I did was I'd see a canceled membership come through and I would think, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry that they canceled, and that would be it. I wouldn't reach out to them. I wouldn't say anything. They'd just be gone. She started reading, and then I noticed I was getting people who were saying things like, well, you know, I had a PayPal issue, and PayPal, I changed my credit card in PayPal, and it canceled all my subscriptions. So I talked to her about that, and what she did was she started reaching out to those people who had canceled and said, did you mean to cancel? And about 60% of the time, it's no. So we've been able to recover about 60% of the people who canceled memberships because they didn't mean to. It was just a problem. So that could be anywhere from, you know, $15 per save per month over a year or a month or however long they stayed. If you do 100 of those each month, then you've almost made up for you. In fact, you have covered that $1,754 that I had to bring in because you saved those. Now, when I started looking at that concept closely, I remembered that there is every big corporation has what's called save department. And in the telecom world, I'll give you an example. My wife and I were driving down the road. We were talking to AT&T because she had ordered a new iPhone and it hadn't come, and she wanted to know what the deal was, where it was, and she was getting run around on the phone, and they were giving her all kinds of excuses, and she spent like 30, 45 minutes on the phone with them, and we were in the car, and I said, okay, enough of this. Tell them to cancel your account. And she said, really? And I said, yep, it's a whole new deal. When you say cancel my account, it's a whole new deal. So she said, I want to cancel my account. And the woman, the customer service rep said, oh, please, wait just a second. I'll get you to my supervisor. And so the supervisor came on, and the problem was resolved in about 30 seconds because she was in the save department. And the people in the save department not only will give you a resolution to your issue immediately, they'll even give you a better deal to keep you. So that's a concept that we want to embed into our own company, is a save department. So my situation is a little unique, so I left this up here. This is my net percent number each month out of every dollar, because I wanted to know these numbers as well. So when you come back to knowing your own number, I can do this for each, and have done this pretty much for each of the contractors that I have. And if their annual income from me is $20,000, then they got to make me $86.96 a day, right? They got to make me $86.96 a day or $15 an hour to be profitable. And we have to figure out what that is, how they can help me be profitable. So that's a whole different way of looking at your expenses. Okay, so let's see, where are we? You understand the expense and the monthly income. Now, what I wanted to do with this as well was actually build this out as a monthly spreadsheet for you. Would that be helpful? That we put this in like so, and we will take this, and this would be, we'll call this 2014. So this would be January. To December, okay, so there is our monthly expenses. You can fill in your own numbers on this to see what your own expenses are. You'll notice that I have some things in here, and I have some things in red because they are even though I've got them in the fixed expense category, they might be something that is varies a little bit. So, for example, by the way, these are just dummy numbers, obviously. So, for example, my Amazon hosting is huge because we host all of our videos out there. So my number on Amazon usually varies between $250 to $350 a month, just for Amazon S3 hosting. Our hosting online actually is running about $650 for that. So that's going to be a pretty consistent expense. That's a consistent expense. Let's do the salary. I like to take a small salary. Oops, I wish it was not that small, but there we go. And so let's put that salary in like that. And shareholder distributions are large on my side. And I do that because of previous shareholder loans, as we were talking about earlier. So I get great tax benefit by having greater shareholder distributions. Salary, by the way, is important if you're incorporated. Actually, what I'm going to do, Stan, is give you this so that you can see the you'll have the formulas right here. The formulas will be except I just blew that one. The formulas will be in the calculated fields on all of these tabs, so you'll get the formulas. Let's see. So the autoresponder. And you'll want to figure out what all of these are. I have Securi, which is a security monitoring company that I pay a regular monthly fee to, and I have a security retainer, somebody who does updates for me and additional stuff there on a regular basis. And actually, I have a lot more stuff that goes into my fixed expenses, and I can detail those out, but you get the example. You get the what I'm talking about here. I have in variable, I have workshop expenses. This is for the NAMS workshop. I just keep $1,000 a month in what is the workshop expenses. But to tell the truth, my expenses in the workshop are pretty low, a lot lower than this. But I just keep it there so that, well, this is one of the places where I had a lot of shareholder loans in the beginning because I bought all of my own equipment. So the company bought the equipment, but I fronted the money for it in the very beginning. Travel. Last year I had very little travel expense in the company. This year I'm doing about $1,000 a month in travel alone because I'm planning on hitting a live event every month. And that's my goal there. So memberships. my membership number is way bigger than this. It's probably 10 times this, because I also have memberships where I get material to put in the NAMS membership and pass it on to you folks. And office expenses, insurance. This is a variable expense, but actually this probably is going to become fixed for the year. I'll give you an example. This is, people complained all year long, and I don't know how much of it to pay attention to or not, but people were all up in arms about Obamacare. And I never really worried about Obamacare. In fact, I don't worry about much, if anything, politically, because whatever's there is just usually not going to work. And that's just kind of my take on things. I don't pay attention to the news. For an old journalist, I'm a guy who doesn't pay attention to the news. And I also don't pay attention to our government, unfortunately, much anymore. But Obamacare came along, and I thought, we'll wait and see what happens with Obamacare. Because I have a corporate structure, because I have kept my salary and my income low, this is my personal, and my wife's, by the way, that's my wife's and my personal salary that we keep, just enough to pay our mortgage and buy groceries, because almost every other expense we have runs through corporation. And so our salary was low. Obamacare came through, and we saved $1,000 a month on our health insurance because of Obamacare. So, you know, whether you like it, whether it's good or bad, it's just a benefit of being incorporated and controlling your income. And the company pays for it. So that's a benefit. And it's here. And we have really good insurance. So that's great. Okay, so you can fill this out. Now, let's add a growth number, as Will did, right? So you want to we want a profit, right? We want a sales and marketing. So these are our expense totals here. So we're going to add the profit with revenue. Okay, so monthly revenue. Okay, and if you want, you can break these out into types of revenue and then do a total. So it's always good to have a diversified. And if I were you, Art asked me what kind of insurance I got, limits and deductibles, if you don't mind sharing. So we went from a, we went from a $1,000 a month deductible, not $1,000 a year deductible, to a $200 a year deductible, and kept Blue Cross Blue Shield and got even better coverage than we had before, with all kinds of dental and vision. We didn't have vision before. The only problem with the insurance that we got was that our current dentist doesn't take Blue Cross Blue Shield. So we have to go to another dentist. That's a small price to pay. So revenue, we're going to break it out into different streams, which is affiliate promotions for us, product sales, and recurring revenue. Okay? Now, and then let's add a growth number. We'll add the growth number after the total at the bottom. We'll just stick with these, but you could add more. Change the formula here to be okay. Okay. Now let's say we have $10,000 in expenses, and we want to have we want to make a profit, so we have to make at least $10,000. So let's say that we have $2,000 in affiliate promotions, profit, or not profit, but revenue. We have $7,000. No, let's do it this way. $5,000 in product sales and $6,000 in recurring revenue. The recurring revenue obviously has more value, right? Because these things you have to do every month. Unless you're doing lifetime database referral programs that you promote, because you're going to get commissions from those affiliate programs on a regular basis as well. So that's kind of like in the recurring category. It's kind of a hybrid. Okay, so I like that because I can already see that we're going to have a profit, right? Okay, so profit is $2,830 on that. Let's put a growth into it. Okay, so that's going to be zero because it's not going to grow in the current month. The next month is going to be 10%. And we can make that a percentage, and then we can let's just make it crazy. Okay, and if I do this, then it's going to go up 5% every month. See what happens. This is the kind of growth Will was talking about, okay? So, equals this one times this one. And that would be, I want to do this, star, and no, not there, star there, and we're going to make this equal sum of that plus, then we go back to B20. So you see that's added 10% there. Now if I copy that, bring it down here, down there. So our growth in profit is 10% all along the way. Okay? So if I copy this now, this is nice. I love numbers, the way you can play with numbers and just build whatever you want to. So 5% a month, 5% increase each month in the growth from the previous month. And, you know, by the end of the year, you're doing $316,000. So that's a ton of growth. But truthfully, what we probably would want to do more realistically is change this formula to be... make it B20 as our base so that we're growing that much over the previous part of the year. So that would be B20 and that would not be B star B or dollar sign B. That would be that would be the 20. B would be correct. Okay. These don't change because that's correct. Okay, but this will change. So I'm going to do that. So that's more reasonable. So 60% difference in growth, right? So you'd be looking at that much difference over the year. These are the kind of the buckets that you would shoot for. All right, so does that make sense? Does that help you understand how to predict and build your growth pattern? And this is outrageous, so let's just do this a little more reasonably. So 30% growth by the end of the year from the first of the year. Okay. Now, let's see what you guys are saying. I got some questions coming in here. Okay, so payroll. Bookkeeper, the bookkeeper that I have also does payroll. She does it through the QuickBooks system, and that is the way that I would do it. So, and the way we like to do it, because it's very cheap and there's not enough people. If you have a lot of people, we've gone with Paychex before. We've used Paychex and ADP before, and it really was pretty good. I liked it a lot. But man, when something goes wrong in their systems, it goes way wrong. For example, they didn't file the taxes for us because they didn't close out the filing of taxes when we stopped using their service. So the IRS kept pinging us saying, "Where's your tax form? Where's your tax form?" When it was always being input by somebody else, but because Paychex hadn't done what they were supposed to do, it got to be a mess. And it turned out that the office that we were using was really not a great office, and they ended up closing that office. But we used them before in Atlanta and loved them. So Paychex was really a good service to use. I loved them, and I loved ADP as well. But the bookkeeper does it for me. Bookkeeper does a great job with this. In fact, she has access to our investment account. We have an E-Trade business account, and she actually does deposits into the 401k for us as well. One of our salaries goes directly into the 401k, so we don't even get that money into our bank account. It doesn't hit our bank account. Okay, Stan says, why would it not be percent of the total? It would be. It could be the percent of the total. But this, the way I did it, I just wanted 10% growth throughout the entire, through each of the categories, Stan. I could easily have done 10% of that total and come up with the same numbers down here. Okay, so now, if you look at your numbers and you know what you're hitting, you've got $31,000 in revenue. And this would, to be in my case, this would be net revenue. This would be what's left over after affiliates, right? Because I have to take out affiliates. I haven't accounted for affiliates in here. If I wanted to do it to account for affiliates in here, it could get kind of complicated. I would have to add a variable line up here and create an affiliate line that actually did 43% of recurring and product sales, 43% would be the expense, and then that would reflect how much goes out to affiliates. But you would see these numbers have to be a lot bigger if I start adding in affiliate numbers. So, does this make sense? Does this help you understand how to build this thing that Will was talking about earlier today? And it is pretty simple, right? I mean, once you start plugging in your numbers, it is pretty simple. Okay. So we're going to call this your monthly profit. Okay. And this is going to be your growth number. Make that. And this is going to be your profit number. Okay. Now you'll have this. This is a 2010 spreadsheet. I think I can save it down to a 2007, maybe a 2003 version. I will save this for you guys so that you can have it. I wanted to go over to this first tab, though. We've talked about variable expenses, profit, monthly profit. By the way, I have a spreadsheet like this. It is a lot more complicated. I have all of our fixed and variable expenses in here. And they pull from one another, so that when I change my expenses in one category over here, it automatically flows through over here. And you can do that pretty easily if you know a little bit about Excel. But I don't want to go into that today. It's not an Excel thing. Okay. The concept of knowing your number is huge. The concept of variable and fixed expenses are fixed costs are huge. The concept of monthly profit, understanding how to build monthly profit and project for it, is large. Now let's carry this one step further. Okay. Monthly promotion. This is what Will was talking about. Let's say we're going to start with February. Now let's start with March, since there's 31 days in March and you can actually do what you want with this. Now if I were you, I would create a sheet for each month if you want to build a promotion calendar. And you would do ...31 days, and you're going to promotion description, you're going to do a profit, and you're going to do actual. Okay. The expense, I think Will showed on his, he showed the expense as well. We won't do that because we have accounted for that. Where is it, Will? Where do we put that? Not here. Yeah, here. So what do you... Oh, he had it just by month? No. Where is it? There it is. Gross revenue, planned profit. Okay. He has gross revenue and planned profit. We're only going to deal with the profit and the actual, because the revenue is the other thing that we talked about on the separate sheet there. So we're just going to keep this really simple. And so you would have promo one. When Will was talking about the thing that I really liked earlier, he talked about being too proud to make money. This is where I got stuck when I was first getting started. I was too proud to do a promo because I thought, "Oh, I'm asking people for money," and I had a really warped sense of money, and I still do sometimes, but. In the corporate world, you know, when you worked on the back end of the corporate stuff, you just looked at numbers. You didn't ask people for money. You just looked at numbers, did analysis. So we built funnels and we built processes and we did all that kind of stuff, but I was never actually sending a promotion out. And the whole idea of sending a promotion out was kind of abhorrent to me. Now that I'm in business for myself again, doing a daily promotion is part of business, and so we have to kind of figure out ways to do that and keep our mental attitude great as well. So if this is March and I set over here my monthly profit in March is going to be $5,690, that's my target. See, I'm going to copy that and I'm going to put down here target. Oh, wait. How do I do that? Let's see. I want to... Oh, I know what it is. Okay. Copy. And this is a paste. Bum, 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 bum. Paste special. I think it is formulas. Nope, that's not it. You put me on the spot, so I forgot how to do it. Okay, so I'm going to say 5690 is my target. So I've got 31 days there. That's almost $6,000. That's, where's my calculator? 5690 divided by 31. So I need $183.54 in profit a day. So let's just do $185 profit a day. And then it's going to total. Sum. Okay. 5737, 5735, and then the actual. Let's say the actual will be 190. Total equals 58. Okay, so we are in the black. We're in the black by a lot. But we want to know how much we exceeded the target by. So performance would be this minus this. Oops. This minus this is what that would be. So it would be $200 that we were better than our target number. That's what we want. Okay? So we'd end up doing promotions. This is how you build a schedule for your promotions for the month. And what they need to do. Now, if you don't do anything on Friday, on Saturday, Sunday, for example, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do a couple of days a month. You block those out, and then you change your numbers so that you build those numbers to what they need to be. Now, obviously, you don't want to hit the same number every day. You might have a promotion that's a $7 promotion one day, and your number is $185. You might have a promotion that's a $100 promotion one day, and it's $400. And if you have an affiliate promotion, you got to figure out what your commission is going to be, and you got to monitor that and plug it in. What is it? So these are really very basic accounting skills, but it's the daily operations of running your business that's really important. Does this help? I hope this is really helping you guys see how to do, just in a single spreadsheet, the kind of things that are important. Ute says, the beauty of this is it fits for any start. We'll see what 2014 brings. She set the goal, but this is so much more helpful and clear and realistic to adjust. And Stan says promotions are just where you get your numbers from. Yeah, I know, Stan, but you know it's a mindset change. And let's see. I needed to use sales rather than profit. No, here I'm talking about profit. I didn't add a sales column. I could add a sales column right here, which would be revenue. But I really only cared about profit in this. So if I'm, if I had 500 in sales, then 185 in profit is still 185 in profit. I'm really not concerned about sales nearly as much as I am about profit. Okay, good. Yeah, and Stan makes a good point. He said this looks like part of a winning business plan. If you don't have a business plan this is what your business plan would look like. I mean, you've got all of the tabs here that you can use in your business plan. Knowing your numbers, variable and fixed profit, variable and fixed cost, the monthly profit, the March promotions. You could do a monthly promotion through here. This is called pro forma when you do a business plan. These are your pro formas. And then staffing would be, who's going to be your staff? What are they going to do? That's where we would put the org chart information in. And then you would have, let's see, the sales column is actually, the sales tab is actually the March promotions. So I'm going to take that out. Let's see, Gayla says, how are you going to allow for fixed variable expenses from sales every day? That would be hard to track. That's true. That would be hard to track. But if I know that my fixed and variable sales on a monthly basis are going to be, where is it? Here. If I know, excuse me, in March, if I know that my monthly expenses are $10,170, then let's just say that I can assume that my daily expenses are going to be $328.06. So if you want to extrapolate that and you want $185 in profit that day, then you're going to want $513.06 in sales. Oh, yeah. I think Gayla makes a really good point, because I think this is really, really important. This has been the big shift in my business in the last year. She says, so you're backing into your sales number rather than starting with sales. That's a bit of a different approach. I can see how it would shift the mindset. Absolutely. If I know what my profit has to be, then I know what my sales have to be. I don't start with sales and say, oh, how am I going to squeak out the profit? It's changed everything that I do. So, for example, my email marketing has changed because I know I need to hit sales numbers. You know, and it's not different from old sales organizations. They all had a quota, right? They all knew what their quota was. They had to hit so many sales numbers each month to make their monthly quota. And that's what we're doing here. These are our quotas. So it's really an interesting approach to how to make money online. This is not the important number right here. This is the important number, the profit. So if I know what the profit needs to be, then I know what my sales are going to have to be, because I've got every other number put in place. Okay? Any other questions about this before we move on to the front tab, the infrastructure tab? Okay. So we talked about a lot of stuff in today's workshop. This is, we talked about company structure, and we talked about the team. And your team needs to be not only your own staff, of course, but from a getting started perspective, this is like a checklist here. And what I'm trying to encourage you to do is see this as a checklist. So I'm going to go ahead and make it look like a checklist so that we can make sure that you understand what your starting points are. So let me just grab this. Okay, those are the things you're going to have to deal with. You're going to have to define, where's insert? You're going to have to define your organization structure. Detail the jobs. Well, one thing I didn't show you over here, and I want to go back to this because it's important. Let's see. Yeah, here, this. We talked about this org chart. What I didn't tell you was that the thing you need to do for each one of these job positions, even if you're doing them all, is write a job description. Because you want to know what these roles are supposed to be doing. And then you need to do those roles if you are doing all of these roles. So that's something that Gerber really talked about quite a bit. And it was that you have to write a job description, make sure that the person you put into those roles can fulfill that job description. If it's you, then you have to know what the job description is and actually do it. So you want to write a job description for CEO, CMO, CIO, CFO, COO. And that'll be part of this plan that we're dealing with over here. Let's just call that job descriptions. Okay. And assign players or stakeholders. Let's call it assign names. Make it clear. You determine incorporation, which of these are you going to check? Which of these are you going to do? The banking situations. You want to bank a business account, business savings, investment account. The first thing you want to do is create a relationship. So can you tell me why so many people in local business belong to Rotary and Elks and Kiwanis and Lions Club and all of those things? Anybody belong to any of those organizations here? Yes or no? Art says networking. Anybody else belong to any of these organizations that I just described? Okay. Stan says doing well by doing good. That's kind of it. Okay. I was in the Rotary for about 4 years, and I really liked the Rotary, but I started traveling so much that I couldn't do it. One of the reasons I liked being in the Rotary is because that's where my banking relationship started. That's where my insurance relationship started. That's where I was finding people that I could work with and getting to know them before I started working with them. So it's a really good place for you to, if you're in local business, it's a great way to go and just get to know people. Don't go in with high expectations. Don't go in with, you know, somebody's going to do business with me. Go in and get to know people and figure out how you can do business with them. Because those relationships become very important to you. And the bank relationship is really important. You want to be able to call the person on the bank, at the bank, and get done what you need to get done. Insurance. You want to evaluate liability first. Then you want to do... we're all going to have health insurance. And the best way of doing that... you can even do, if you use your automobile or other insurance, other assets in your business, you can have the business pay for that insurance. So one of the things you want to make sure that you do is review possibilities with agent. Okay. And I think that covers it for the insurance. Then you got support. Set up support desk. I used to, by the way, I never wanted to have a support desk because I always thought, oh, it's really impersonal and I want people to be able to email me directly and get support. That's really a disservice because I couldn't always be at the email, and also because I can't collect information in my email and use it as FAQs. FAQs are really helpful to people who want to find out the answer on their own quickly. So you'll notice we're building FAQs all the time in our support desk. And that's an important aspect of our support desk. We try to get people to go to the support desk first because they're going to find an answer pretty quickly there to the questions that they have. And also the support desk, as you start accumulating responses, you start seeing trends. So you know what needs to be fixed, you know what the problems are, you know where the holes are. So support desk is really important from that perspective. And then you want to assign the right people and do the training. Because training, support training is really important. Well, I got lucky. I found Anita who actually came to me because she was supporting a couple of other people that I knew, and I've kind of taken her over. She works mostly for me now, which is fine. And she does a great job. Accounting, there is CPA, there's taxes, there's financial planning, and there is... bookkeeping, and tracking. Okay. And there's tracking systems that we talked about as well. Google Analytics, Zendesk, Spreadsheet, QuickBooks. Now, one of the things, if you get good at QuickBooks, you can actually get a report in QuickBooks that gives you pretty much the stuff that we have down here, but I still like it in a spreadsheet so I can see it. So sometimes I'll even export it into a spreadsheet so I can take a look in ways that I can analyze. And by the way, that's another reason that you might want to do something like this so that you can actually build a graph and see what kind of growth you actually have. And graphs in spreadsheets are pretty easy to do now. You just go to the insert and insert the kind of graph that you want, and you identify the data range, so of course as soon as I said it's easy, that's not the right data range. Yeah, well, whatever. Look at the graphs. You'll like them. Yeah, and Stan says make charts for the visual people. And I like charts and graphs because I can quickly compare. And this can get pretty blinding sometimes. Okay. Back to the infrastructure. So we have Google Analytics, Zendesk, Spreadsheet, QuickBooks. Other tracking systems you might want to look at is your traffic. Click. So for example, I have Go Try This. That gives me really good click traffic that I can see coming in. Doesn't always give me good conversion information, but I could set it up to give me better conversion information. And what else would you use for tracking? There are things like Kissmetrics. There's a new Google Analytics add-on I just saw yesterday from WordPress WPMU that is called Google Analytics, but it also is called Power Plugins, I think it is. Power Plugins that you can add and do Google Analytics on every post in your blog. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Anything we've missed? Anything that you think needs to be added to this list? So I am going on some trips. As I said earlier, I'm going to live events. And my wife asked me the other day, why am I going to so many this year? And the truth is that I'm able to track from live events how much money I make from each event, because I create unique links that get people back into the system, and also I make arrangements to do promotions with people back into the system, and those things are driving people back into sales that can be tracked in our system. So that's the reason I go to live events and I'm doing that. And if I didn't have the tracking for that, I would just have to kind of guess and tell her I think it's doing me a good service. I think it's working in the business. And that doesn't go very far. It's really nice to have numbers, even with the spouse, so that you can verify stuff. Stan said vendors may be something that we leave off of. Excuse me. Stan said vendors may be something that we're leaving off of here. And I would say vendors is something you want to add. Trusted partners kind of thing. But I'm not sure that it is part of your infrastructure unless vendor financing is something that you do. Now, vendor financing, if you create a business plan, one of the ways that you can actually use to finance your business is getting your vendors to finance you by extending you 60, 90, 120-day credit. I don't recommend it, but that is something you can look at. So if you're looking at building a business plan, that's one of the most important things that you can look at is what your vendor relationships are, and then those things become assets. So when we're talking about building sustainable assets and sustainable business, I think you see that these kind of things really help us move in that direction, that we have all of these things in place. And the first thing that I love about incorporating is that you have created an asset by definition. And a corporation is something that is not you. You may be the partner and the shareholder in it, but it's an asset that is not you. You can sell that if you want to. Domains are an asset. I've got one domain that that appraises for $25,000, and I'll be selling that as soon as I can because I've made a conscious decision not to use that domain anymore. And I stripped everything off of it toward the last fall, and I'm going to just sell the domain because it's such a good domain word. But you want to make sure, like Will was saying earlier today, that you find other ways to build more sustainable assets and more streams of income. So I think we've pretty much covered it, guys. Anything else that you want to cover? I think this may be one of the most important numbers that you have hit today, one of the most important tabs that you've hit today. Figure out what your number is and figure out how you can improve it, increase it, and do your daily goals. Remember, the way these work is when you're an active insider member, on the day that we do these, you get this in your system for free as an insider. Not for free, because you've paid for it. You get it in your system as an insider. If somebody comes in next week as a new insider, they don't get this. They get the next one.